6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis said Thursday the military is investigating the deaths of four American soldiers in Niger earlier this month at the hands of Islamic jihadists. He told reporters a full investigation is underway into the incident, as is the case any time a U.S. service member is killed, and the military would release any new information it receives in a timely fashion.
One point I would make, having seen some of the news reports, the U.S. military does not leave its troops behind, and I would just ask that you not question the actions of the troops who were caught in the firefight and question whether or not they did everything they could in order to bring everyone out at once. And I would also ask you don't confuse your need for accurate information with our ability to provide it immediately in a situation like this.
White House Chief of Staff John Kelly defended President Donald Trump's handling of the deaths of the U.S. service members and delivered an intense emotional rebuke to those who he accused of politicizing the issue. Speaking at a White House press briefing Thursday, Kelly said he was stunned when a U.S. Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, accused Mr. Trump of being insensitive to the mother of a fallen soldier during a recent phone call. Congresswoman Wilson on Tuesday claimed that Mr. Trump inappropriately told the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson that he knew what he signed up for during a phone call in which Mr. Trump offered his sympathy. Johnson and three other U.S. Special Forces were killed by Islamic State-linked militants earlier this month in an incident near the Niger-Mali border that has raised questions about the quality of U.S. intelligence. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is heading to the Middle East Friday, attending the first meeting between the governments of Saudi Arabia and Iraq, and exploring ways of improving relations between the two countries. The inaugural Coordination Council meeting comes amid a warming of relations between Riyadh and Baghdad. The gathering is seen as part of a U.S. effort to reduce Iran's increasing influence in Iraq by encouraging Baghdad to align more with Riyadh. Iran is also a huge concern of ours, not just in Iraq, but throughout the region, according to State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert on Thursday. In an extended Oval Office meeting, Puerto Rico's governor has pleaded with President Donald Trump for equal treatment for the hurricane-devastated island, repeatedly reminding him that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. Mr. Trump defended the federal government's response to the devastation left a month ago by Hurricane Maria. The president declared the response in Puerto Rico by the U.S. government a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. The governor of the U.S. Commonwealth declined to put a grade on the response, but did say that we're thankful to the president for supporting these petitions to Congress and promising no U.S. citizen will be left behind. Iraq, Kurdistan's two main political families and their supporters traded accusations of blame Wednesday for the Iraqi army's easy takeover this week of the city of Kirkuk and other disputed areas in northern Iraq, which the Kurds seized from the Islamic State terror group 3 years ago. Some Kurdish leaders express fears that Kurdistan could be split into two if things worsen, taking the region back to when it was divided during a three-year-long civil war between Iraqi Kurds in the 1990s. North Korea is likely just months away from being capable of striking the United States with a nuclear missile. That's according to two top U.S. officials. CIA Director Mike Pompeo told a forum in Washington Thursday he is deeply worried about the advancing threat from North Korea and the possibility it could launch a warhead. And also, U.S. National Security Advisor General H.R. McMaster said that he was also concerned. Two former U.S. presidents Thursday spoke of the divisiveness currently in America. 43rd President George W. Bush did not speak of President Trump in a New York speech, but his message seemed aimed at him for his frequent Twitter taunts against political rivals and his attempts to curb immigration into the U.S. and abandonment of international trade deals. Also, during a campaign rally in Richmond, Virginia, south of Washington, D.C., 44th President Barack Obama was very critical of the state of national politics. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Elections Commission announces final results of the October 10 poll and the beginning of campaigning for the November 7th runoff.
We are holding this poll declaring that the runoff election will be held on November 7th, 2017, between the two candidates with the highest vote. That would be Mr. George Malinguia and Mr. Joseph Newman Wakari.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. Meanwhile, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf condemns what she calls the abuse and misuse of social media. Some Zimbabwe members of parliament are threatening a boycott today, Friday. And Ugandan police are condemned for violence against peaceful opposition demonstrators.
This was a completely unnecessary violence on the part of the police. In the exchange, they shot another person whom now I understand has died in the hospital. It has to be condemned.
Chisa Besigye is the former presidential candidate of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change of Uganda. And South Sudan's president dedicates the country's first ever kidney hospital. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The chair of Liberia's Elections Commission, Jerome Kokoya, Thursday announced the final results of the country's October 10th presidential elections and the beginning of campaigning for the November 7th runoff. With 100% of all polling places reporting, Kokoya said Senator George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change got 38.4% of the vote, followed by Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party with 28.8%. Charles Bromsky of the Liberty Party came third with 9.6%, followed by Senator Prince Johnson in fourth place with 8.2%. In fifth place was Alexander Cummings with 7.2% of the vote. Because no one candidate got the constitutionally required 50% plus one vote, Kokoya announced that Senator Weah and Vice President Boakai will contest the runoff election scheduled for Tuesday, November 7.
Weah, George Manning, CDC, obtained a total of 596,037, and that constitutes 38.4% of the overall vote. Joseph Numa Wakai of the Unity Party, 446,716, constituting 28.8%. Charles Walker Bromsey of the Liberty Party, 149,495. And that will account for 9.6%. There is no single candidate that took obtained 50% plus one. Under the law of Liberia, in such a case, a runoff election is declared by this commission. And we are holding this so declared that the runoff election will be held on November 7, 2017 of this year between the two candidates with the highest vote. That would be Mr. George Malinguia of the TDC and Mr. Joseph Newman Wakari of the Unity Party. The official campaign for the November 7 election is hereby declared open and drawn closed precisely 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, November 5, 2017.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. She spoke Thursday in the capital, Monrovia. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has condemned what she calls the abuse of social media through the use of invectives, hate speech, and outright vulgarity, which she says denigrates adversaries. The president appealed to Liberians to remain civil, to be tolerant of divergent opinions and views. The condemnation came Thursday as a video circulating on social media called on Liberians to burn Election Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya and members of his commission alive if George Weah does not win the election. President Sirleaf urged Liberians to express their indignation to what she calls this unacceptable way of politicking. She called on Liberians to consolidate the democratic gains made over the last 12 years by voting peacefully.
We condemn the abuse and misuse of social media through the use of invectives, hate speech, and outright vulgarity, which denigrates adversaries with whom we might hold disagreement. In light of the progress we have collectively made, I call on all our fellow Liberians to remain civil, responsible, and continue to be tolerant of diverging opinions and views that might not necessarily be favorable to ours. Resorting to profanities on social media contributes nothing to the national discourse, but only serves to paint our national and international image in a very bad light. We must all express our indignation to this unacceptable way of politicking and seek to continue the decent democratic values that have brought us this far as a nation and people. As Liberians pat themselves on the back for peacefully voting in the October 10 polls, all must continue to demonstrate our love for country by and through our actions. Our greatest task must focus on how we consolidate the democratic gains made over the last 12 years by voting peacefully and nationally, respecting the law, and keeping the peace for the greater good of our country.
That's Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf on what she calls the misuse and abuse of social media. Some members of parliament in Zimbabwe say they will boycott Friday's meetings on pre-2018 budget consultations to drive home their demand to review and pay their perks on time. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
On Thursday, there was little business in parliament as Zimbabwe's MPs argued that they are the lowest paid in Southern Africa. You might not be picking what that ruling ZANU-PF MP Irene Zindi is saying as she's swarmed by fellow legislators cheering her on. The issue of perks started earlier this week after it was suggested that Zimbabwe's MPs must declare their assets. Instead, the MPs proposed setting up of a commission to look into their welfare. There was excitement in parliament. Deputy Speaker Mebo Chinomona's calls for order in the House for long fell on deaf ears. That answer did not satisfy the Zimbabwean MPs who have a monthly salary of $1,000 and then seating and fuel allowances. Besides asking for a review, they say they have not been receiving their allowances on time since they started their term in 2013. The government claims bankruptcy. Opposition MP Prince Sibanda travels weekly about 1,200 kilometers by road to Harare from his constituency on the border with Zambia. He does not believe what Minister of Finance Ignatius Chombo says, that President Robert Mugabe's government is broke.
We can only believe that there's no money if Chombo and Mugabe begin to behave in a manner that shows that indeed, as a country, all of us are suffering. There's no money. Go to the Finance Department of Parliament and see how much I'm owed in terms of fuel from 2013 up to now. I don't know how much I'm owed, but I'm owed thousands and thousands of dollars. Is that fair? I come from Binga, where people still walk up to about 15, 20 kilometers to access primary health care. I can use that money to put up infrastructure for a clinic, although it won't have a nurse. I am seeing the poverty. Mugabe doesn't know the poverty that is prevailing in this country. He has got no time to go and see people on the ground.
That was a reference to President Mugabe's frequent travels abroad, which have chewed millions and millions of dollars when ordinary Zimbabweans are suffering. The 93-year-old leader is in Uruguay attending a conference on non-communicable diseases, one of the several international trips that he has made this year. MPs say that confirms that Zimbabwe has money and their dues should not only be paid on time but reviewed. To push for that to happen, they want to boycott this Friday's Zimbabwe pre-2018 budget seminar for MPs. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 20th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give shout-outs to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Brila FM in Lagos, Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, and Radio Hot Cocoa, also in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The Uganda Human Rights Commission has condemned the police directive preventing members of the opposition from holding consultative meetings. On Monday, the police issued a directive preventing members of the opposition from addressing rallies aimed at discussing the proposed amendment to remove age limit from the Constitution. Late reports from Uganda say police arrested former Forum for Democratic Change presidential candidate Kizza Besigye Thursday night for holding unlawful assembly. Livingston Siwanyana, the head of the Uganda Human Rights Commission, says preventing opposition members from holding consultative meetings deprived them and their supporters their right to peacefully assemble. Mugumi Davis Rakarins reports from Kampala.
Livingston Sewanyana says the opposition should be allowed to get views from people who elected them.
The directive issued by the police in itself is very absurd. It amounts to a prohibition. Yet, at this point in time, we must exercise restraint. The opposition should, like the other party, be allowed to reach out. The law does not in any way prohibit any person carrying out consultations if they are one or more. Any prohibition of that nature under Article 43 of the Constitution would amount to political persecution.
He says the police must ensure they are impartial in doing their work. Dr. Kizza Besigye, the former president of Forum for Democratic Change, Uganda's main opposition party, agrees. At least one person was killed this Wednesday in Rukunji district of Western Uganda as the police tried to disperse residents listening to area MP Roland Mugume. Best defaults the police.
This was a completely unnecessary violence on the part of the police. It was completely uncalled for. In the exchange, they shot another person, whom now I understand has died in the hospital. It has to be condemned. The one they killed in the playground, they killed in cold blood.
Various members of the opposition were arrested and their rallies dispersed this week as they tried to address the electorate. Luke Wesijile, the deputy spokesperson for Kampala Metropolitan Police, insists politicians should adhere to the police directive.
We try to talk to them and let them know what they are supposed to be doing as per what we had passed earlier on, and they try to defy what we are telling them. So we had nothing to do but to close, of course, the meeting that was going on.
Among other directives, MPs are banned from consulting in the constituencies other than their own. Lawmakers have been conducting public rallies in groups in eastern Uganda and Kampala. The directive also states that there should be no intimidation of persons perceived to be supporting the removal of age limit. No member of parliament in support of the removal of age limit has been detained or questioned by police for holding rallies. Rafael Majezi, member of parliament for Igara West, tabled a motion in parliament late last month, which, among other things, seeks to remove age caps as a basis of eligibility for one to contest for presidency or district chairperson. The Ugandan constitution requires a person contesting for these offices to be between 35 to 75 years of age. It is expected that the bill, once passed, will allow President Yoweri Museveni, who will be 76 years in 2021, to contest yet again. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Critics of the proposed constitutional amendment to remove age limits say its aim is to prolong longtime President Yoweri Museveni in office, Museveni who came to power in 1986. However, supporters of the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, say the accusations are without merit. They congratulated the police for enforcing the laws as mandated by the Constitution. But in this interview with VOA's Peter Clotty, opposition parliamentarian Matthias Mpuuga says the government appears to be determined to crush efforts to resist the constitutional amendment that it seeks to carry out.
The security apparatus of the regime, in particular the police, has taken over everything relating to the rule of law in this country. So they have literally banned members of parliament from consulting jointly with the community. And the latest arrest follows the shooting in Kampala, sometime back in Kasubi, a suburb of Kampala, and the shooting yesterday in Lukungiri in southwestern Uganda, where two people were killed by the police under the same illegal and unconstitutional orders.
The police and supporters of the NRM, the ruling party, are saying that the opposition leaders, parliamentarians, are the ones who are agitating and calling on their supporters to disrupt business activities, disobey law and order, and to attack security officials in the capital and elsewhere around the country.
I am afraid I have attended all these meetings and I have not heard anybody attacking or urging anybody to attack anyone. What actually the opposition is saying is telling the population to reject the machinations of Mr. Museveni and his supporters. These people fear the population so much that after they had seen the opposition receive overwhelming support from the population, they fear going to meet the same people that have greeted the population, the opposition, with enthusiasm and warmth. In fact, a week ago, Mr. Museveni and his NRM supporters met, and they agreed that they cannot manage public meetings because they will be linked. So they are using the police to try and frustrate the opposition from putting their message across in rejecting the machination of Mr. Museveni. The opposition believes in a peaceful country. The opposition would like to take over a country that is peaceful, that is progressive. We do not believe in retribution and revenge. We do not want to revenge on anyone. That's not the way we believe it should be played.
This is what the NRM supporters are saying, that the police are there to enforce the law and to protect life and property, and that when supporters of the opposition parties disrupt business activities, create disaffection, and then create tension in the country, the police have the constitutional mandate to enforce law and order.
I think it's not proper and it's not intelligent for anybody to speak in tongues. Let them point out in a single incident where the opposition actually disturbed anybody's business or attacked anybody's business. Let them single out a single incident. Of course, what they are saying is the perfect reason any lazy human being could afford, faced with the problem of having no reason to take the people.
Matthias Mpuuga is an opposition member of Uganda's parliament. He spoke to VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. President Salva Kiir on Thursday opened South Sudan's first ever kidney hospital in the capital, Juba, calling it a breakthrough for kidney patients. The president says the new hospital will provide free services to the kidney patients. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Guests clapped and women ululated at ribbon cutting ceremony as President Salva Kiir officially opened the Al Cardinal Kidney Hospital in Juba. Mr. Kiir says the hospital's opening marks a milestone in addressing the serious medical needs of South Sudanese.
This facility will enable our citizens who have kidney disease to receive first-class treatment right here at home. They will no longer have to travel abroad for diagnosis or long-term care.
Health Minister Dr. Ria Guy Cock says it's the first time kidney diseases will be treated here since South Sudan became an independent country.
We have been trying to treat malaria, blood pressure, and diabetes. We were able to do other small operations. So today, the 19th of October, will be marked in history that we have services to cater for kidney cases for the first time in the country.
Dr. Maker Isaac is director of Juba Teaching Hospital, the country's only referral hospital. Dr. Isaac says the facility receives 20 new patients each month, but the overwhelming majority of kidney patients are referred to other countries for treatment.
We were very sad because we cannot help them. People die in front of us, and we believe these deaths can be prevented simply by cleaning the blood of the patient, by dialysis, the blood of the patient. But we were not able to do anything. We just watched them dying because they have no money.
Asraf Said Ahmed, a Sudanese investor who heads the Al Cardinal group of companies, built the hospital. The hospital has 10 dialysis machines and the capacity to treat at least 50 patients a day. Speaking in Arabic, Asraf called on President Kiir to ensure that the hospital remains well-staffed. While praising the Al Cardinal group of companies for building the hospital, Mr. Kiir called on additional outside investors to provide financial assistance to some of South Sudan's other sectors.
That's why Kesama Wudu reporting from Juba, South Sudan. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the FIFA Under-17 World Cup, where Mali and Ghana will renew their rivalry at the Under-17 level when they meet at the ongoing World Cup quarterfinal at the Indira Gandhi Athletic Stadium in Guwahati on Saturday. Mali earned their place in the last eight by finishing runners-up to Portugal in Group B before thrashing Iraq 5-1 in their last 16 clash on Tuesday, while Ghana topped Group A and then ousted fellow African Niger 2-0 on Wednesday. Staying with football, the head of the South African 2010 World Cup has been accused of raping a singer and former member of parliament. Danny Jordan, who is currently the South African Football Association president, organized football's biggest event when it was held in South Africa. It was alleged by Jennifer Ferguson to have raped her in a hotel nearly 24 years ago. Ferguson wrote in the blog that the attack took place when she was high and happy following her surprise nomination by Nelson Mandela's African National Congress Party to serve in South Africa's first democratically elected parliament in 1994. As of Thursday night, Danny Jordan had not responded to Ferguson's claim. And now to Uganda, where the Federation of the Ugandan Football Association has roped in Zambian football legend Kalusha Bwalya in an aim to source a suitable candidate for the Ugandan national football team, the Cranes, coaching job. With interim coach Moses Basena's mandate ending after the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers final game against Congo early next month, FUFA has opened a global search for a permanent coach that will take the Cranes to another level. During the press conference addressed by FUFA chief executive Edgar Watson, the federation is seeking to improve on its football fortune in the days and months ahead.
The FUFA Emergency Committee took a decision to open up the job vacancy for the head coach of the Uganda Cranes, who among others will be required to also head the Uganda Corps team. The process will continue where the list that will have been generated will be discussed between FUFA and the government officials.
And it's CAF Champions League weekend as the competition inches towards the finals, as Al Ahly and Etoile Sportive du Sahel will lock horns in a highly anticipated semi-final second leg showdown on Sunday evening. The Tunisians head to Alexandria in control following a 2-1 win in the reverse fixture earlier this month. The winner will come up against either USM Alger or Wydad Casablanca for the 2017 CAF Champions League final. The first leg in all just finished in a 0-0 draw. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to a report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, October 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butter, wishing you a very good weekend.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC, and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.